Letter 1, July 5th, 1586, wherein young Shakespeare sets out from Stratford to make his fortune in the New World, but first must earn entry into a world of traveling players by mending a wheel. We know Shakespeare never set foot on North American soil, but his queen, and later King James, did more than populate colonies with eager young fortune hunters, plant flags, and grab natural resources to fuel the economy back home. They unleashed upon an unsuspecting world the power of the English language, the temperament, and what became the American dream, a good deal of which is thanks to William Shakespeare. In discovering and weaving together these texts with his letters, I came to see that America today, and a world that is influenced by it in so many ways, is a creature of Shakespeare's age.
July 5, 1586, Coventry. Cuz, how oft have we, in service to our fathers, trod the road twixt Stratford and Coventry? How oft have we made the leaden journey pleasant with talk of conquering kingdoms and maidenheads, or the reasons we came home again as masters of neither? Why, then, these 2 days since, on that selfsame highway, as the lengthening distance made the Trinity grow small, came such a parlous fear over me, that I had seen it, and all who dwell within a holy shadow, for the last time. Oh, John, my mind overflows from events unlooked for with a group of men that I know now so briefly. Ink and paper are dear, but I would trade my last scrap of bread to keep this record of my journey, since I fear it will be a long one, and I would have my son know his father. Therefore, cuz, I make thee the book wherein my soul records the history of all its secret thoughts. Be thou, in mine absence, as a friend to my brothers, a son to my mother, a confessor to my wife, indeed the holder of all else I possess, but most of all, be thou as a father to my son. Take from these accounts what matter thou deem'st fit for his youthful ears, saving the rest for his own divining when he is a man, and better suited to understand the whips and scorns of life, labor, love. Deny me not this favor, and God, I trust, will repay thee, even though it is mine own desire to do likewise in some fuller measure ere long. Upon the gallows, Arden thought to speak to those in attendance, kin and stranger alike, to bequeath them a measure of truth before his death. But the guard commanded the drummers to prevent his words from leaving the place of hanging. And as if in a dream, his brave oration became a dumb show. Thus, on a bitter winter's day, in a pitiless rain that froze whatsoever it struck, Edward Arden was hanged. He was taken down, sliced open from guts to garter, his steaming entrails tore out, and his body quartered while yet he lived. Arden's head was struck from his body, and as the commission from Her Majesty commanded, sent to be placed in full view of all would-be traitors, on London Bridge, impaled on a long spear. God's breath! Who could conclude aught by the words long spear but a warning to my father and all our kin? Robert Dudley, the Earl of Leicester, had defeated the Ardens, truly and forever.